All right, let's put our
agenda paper 20.
Agenda paper 20 on the transition resources impairment.
Yep. This is the first board session, so okay. People have to be nice to her.
Okay, so right, in agenda paper 20, we're just going to provide you with a summary of the activities of the impairment transition resource group to date. And we're also going to inform you about a specific issue that was raised at the most recent ITG meeting in September. And so just to remind you, the ITG was set up in 2014 with the aim of supporting stakeholders who were implementing the new expected credit loss requirements in IFRS 9. And we've had three meetings of the ITG to date, and we've got a further meeting scheduled for December of this year. And no further meetings are planned or scheduled for 2016 at this stage, but the group will still remain in place and further meetings will be convened if circumstances warrant it. And so far we've had 21 submissions, and the details of those submissions can be found in Appendix A. And 15 of those submissions have been discussed at the ITG meetings in April and September so far, and we plan to discuss one other in December. And today is actually the closing date for further submissions for the December meeting, so we should know more about the amount of submissions we have for the December meeting by the end of today, hopefully. The remaining five submissions that we received but have not been discussed, they were not discussed because they didn't meet the specific criteria for ITG submission criteria, and they're outlined in paragraph 8 of the agenda paper. So that's things like requests for further guidance or illustrative examples that the ITG isn't permitted to provide. And so overall, the ITG is functioning well, and members are generally agreeing with the staff accounting analysis for the various issues raised. However, during the September meeting, an issue was raised relating to revolving credit facilities, and we agreed to inform the board about this matter. And so a summary of that issue is set out in paragraphs 13 to 23 of the agenda paper. So the issue relates to the measurement of expected credit losses for revolving credit facilities, and specifically the undrawn portion of revolving credit facilities, and whether it would be appropriate to consider an amount in excess of the contractual credit limit when you're estimating future drawdowns. And so our analysis of this issue was set out in Agenda Paper 3 of the September ITG meeting, and it concluded that it wouldn't be appropriate to take an amount in excess of the contractual credit limit into account, because it would be contrary to the impairment requirements in IFRS 9, which are very much based on the contractual terms. And so, for example, we have the definition of credit losses, which talks about the difference between all contractual cash flows due to an entity in accordance with the contract and the cash flows that are expected to be received, and also when considering the maximum period to consider over which you measure your expected credit losses, that's limited to the maximum contractual period over which the entity is exposed to credit risk. And so consequently, when you consider the case of an undrawn portion of a revolving credit facility, while they do need to make an estimation of future drawdowns, that should be done within the contractual terms of the instrument. Now, there is one noteworthy exception to these requirements that are based in the contractual terms, and that relates to the period over which expected credit losses are measured. And again, this relates to certain types of revolving credit facilities. And details of that exception are set out in the agenda paper in paragraphs 16 to 19. But to summarise, the exception was introduced following concerns raised by respondents on the 2013 exposure draft. And they noted that for certain types of revolving credit facilities, the contractual commitment period could be as little as one day. But because of the way in which these facilities were actually managed, the exposure to credit losses continued for a period in excess of that. And so because of that, in these very limited circumstances, IFRS 9 contains the requirement that an entity must measure expected credit losses for a period in excess of the contractual commitment period for these types of facilities. But that is a very limited exception and relates only to the contractual commitment period, not the contractual credit limit. And in our view, we didn't consider that that would be appropriate to analogise. And so the ITG members very much agreed with that analysis that we presented in the agenda paper at the September ITG, and they noted that the requirements of IFRS 9 were clear. However, they did raise an issue and noted that in practice, the actual tenor and amount of the revolving credit facilities were very much linked, because not only do banks extend credit for a period in excess of the contractual commitment period, but they will also allow customers to make drawdowns in excess of the contractual credit limit. And therefore, they pointed out that if we don't allow them to take into account amounts in excess of that contractual credit limit, there would be a potential disconnect between the accounting and risk management view. And so we agreed to inform the board about this matter, but at the moment we don't propose any further action. We point out that the issue does appear to be very limited to these specific types of revolving credit facilities, and that the issue wasn't raised at the time of the 2013 exposure draft. And also the base of conclusions in IFRS 9 does make it very clear that the exception regarding the contractual commitment period was very much a conceptual concession and was intentionally made very limited in scope. And ITG members also were in agreement that the requirements of IFRS 9 were clear in this regard. And so that really summarises Agenda Paper 20. So we'd just like to ask the board if you've got any questions or comments on any of the issues raised in that paper.
I just ask for information, not necessarily to express your view. That is, whether there is some kind of preference for any kind of convergence with UFI. The reason why I ask is because during the trustee meeting, the American trustee, the only one attended, raised the ideas to have competitive numbers for the American bankers. And I noticed the other trustee members are not interested in the ideas. My question to you, for information purpose, then we should align with each other to some extent.
Thanks. Generally, very good. Let me understand the question. Are you saying, are we hearing any views from the ITG about whether the models should be converged or not with the US? From the ITG, that's
yes.
What you mean.
Yes.
We haven't heard any of the submissions or in the discussions whether they are asking for convergence. And in all fairness, the group is focused on the implementation issues that are coming out of 9. So no, I would say, defer to Sue, Steve, Martin, others, I haven't personally heard any of that reaction coming from the ITG as of now, but I don't think that would be the forum also.
Okay, enough.
So I agree absolutely with where you've arrived at in on this particular issue. I must be honest, I think I feel a bit stronger about this particular one than perhaps is spelt out in this paper. To my mind, the allowance that we gave for behavioural was premised on two things. Firstly, it was operationally impossible to review the underlying credits every day. Secondly, there was no triggering event to suggest that a review was necessary. So to my mind, that was what allowed us to extend the tenure of the underlying product until such time as we expect a review to take place. In terms of the actual amount, to my mind, there is a conscious decision that happens post-year end to either decline a payment or accept the payment. And taking that conscious decision is what allows the amount to go above the... So I think all the arguments that we use for extending the tenure are not valid in terms of thinking about the amount.
I had a question and I think a level of concern, but let me say what they are and what they aren't. First of all, I think it was very important for the staff and the ITG to confirm that the exception that we have is not applied by analogy. You know, exceptions are limited to the circumstances. So no quarrel at all with that idea. In terms of actual exceeding the credit limit, did raise for me, and I apologize, I didn't get a chance to go back and read the underlying ITG paper, raised for me the question of when do you conclude that a stated limit is non-substantive, or do you say that doesn't matter because that's the contract? And when does it cross from non-substantive to non-genuine to, you know, kind of a behavioral analysis? Where do we get in all that? And then, so that's the question about how we think about things. Separate question, I think kind of building on Daryl's, is, well, the analysis may say you can't anticipate drawdowns in excess of the credit limit. Presumably when you are doing the reporting, if there have been drawdowns in excess of the credit limit, there is no question that those are things that have to be assessed for impairment. So we, you know, maybe we don't have a concern about an understatement of the expected credit loss for the actual exposure. It's just how much you are anticipating in your expected credit loss. Okay, so your head nodding, Kumar, seems to be confirming that last bit.
The last bit. The first bit, why didn't you?
Yeah, so on the non-substantive point, I think the difficulty is that, you know, is it about the bank choosing, but, you know, not to exercise that right, or is it being prevented from doing so? Because with the contractual credit limit, while they may choose routinely to allow it to be exceeded, if something did happen, they would certainly be probably the first ones to enforce it. So I don't know about, I mean, certainly a point worth considering, but that non-substantive, whether or not you'd consider it to be really non-substantive on the grounds that they just choose not to to stick to it or not.
So this is more Daryl's point about,
yeah,
at some level it's the conscious decision, yeah, to accept the, yeah, payment rather.
The practical ability versus kind of choosing not to. Yeah.
They will. Means one thing is certain, whatever it is, it's not kindness that they will let you, when you're not paying, let,
yeah,
you exceed. It's how often they look at it and when they do it. But as soon as they do that assessment, they will cut it down. They won't let it go. It's a question of, as Daryl goes, is how far do you do that? But
yeah,
I think it is difficult to argue that this is not substantive. It is clearly a substantive term, but it's purely behavioral, as you said. What I agree with the second part is the bit where I think the board was very clear they didn't want to extend beyond the contractual tenure to the terms to pure behavioralization of the exposures.
Pat?
My question is very similar to Mary's, and I just want to confirm my understanding of the facts. Let's say you have a situation where at the end of the balance sheet period, the end of the whatever it is, quarter or year, you have a loan that's at the limit. 15 days after the end of the period, there's a borrowing in excess of the limit. Now you're making your estimate sometime in the process of, you know, updating and preparing your balance sheet as of the end of the year. And as we all know, systems are what they are, and the right hand doesn't always talk to the left hand in organizations. This thing, you would think, in a perfect world would get captured. So the question I have is whether or not you would take into consideration, and I think you said yes to Mary, in setting your expected loss, obviously, the drawdown that has occurred after the balance sheet period, presumably.
Not after.
You think you would or you wouldn't?
No.
Not after.
So even though it's drawn, it's a fact.
But it's after the period. It's after the closing period.
Understood. But because you're making a prediction of future cash flows to be collected or not collected.
Remember, this is on an expected basis, Pat. So
right.
You have to, this is, you're basing your expectations. And what the standard does is puts a limit. What is the maximum you can draw down? And that's, I would say, in most cases is the contractual credit limit you will have. What the standard doesn't let you do is to say that just on pure behavioralization basis, even though you don't know whether you're going to happen, you can exceed that credit limit because you have an expectation to do so. That's where the cap comes in.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking of is all of the facts and information that you have available to you at a point in time would obviously say they've exceeded the limit, right?
Not at the balance sheet date.
I'm sorry?
Not at the balance sheet date.
But we know with perfect hindsight, 15 days into the quarter, they did draw down. So now it's the 20th of December, I'm closing my books for the year end. I know this event has occurred. You're saying
I mean, you've changed the facts a little bit.
20th of January.
I'm sorry, 20th of January.
I think the thing is,
IAS 10 in the normal way, right?
Yeah, that's the normal post-balance sheet event issues that come up. What is the thing that, and that was also discussed at the ITG. But the question that is coming up is also, don't forget, as Daryl pointed out, as 31st of December, if that's your year end, you will take a close and take some credit mitigation action. So we are saying that even if I, after all of this evaluation and everything, we will still let the balance to exceed, how far do we go? Then we'll have to deviate from the entire basis of what is the contractual terms of the instrument, because that can happen on a number of other instances. And not number, in this relative cases when you have revolving portfolios where you can't see that occasionally, but that goes away from the fundamental conceptual basis on what 9 was developed.
De facto, though, you have reset the contractual terms by
They don't claim that. They will not say that they have done that. They will say that they haven't monitored, and therefore it has gone up. Once, as soon as they do monitoring, the credit mitigation actions come into play.
I mean, what, if you're going to do that, why not start booking expected losses on the loan you make 1 week after balance date?
Yeah.
That may make sense.
Because it's not different.
but that's future losses on future lending.
No, this is something I know has occurred.
I know I lent
and I'm looking at the behavior of the customer.
We have to respect IAS 10, surely.
Well, that's where I'm trying to understand where you're.
You'll have to draw the line is somewhere. That's where the board drew the line in the sand.
That's all I wanted to know.
but Kumar does point out to me that it might be helpful, maybe even in the reporting back of this discussion, to have some kind of specific statement about the interaction of IS 10 events after the balance sheet date with consideration of expected credit losses, because that is forward looking. Just, you know, make it clear what the consideration is.
The ITG's actually already had a discussion on the interaction between the standard and IS 10, because for lots of reasons it's relevant, because of these sorts of drawdowns and because of expectations changing.
We'll certainly report back, Mary, but one of the things also I wanted to emphasize is that the ITG was also very clear that the standard is clear. Means that's what? It's a wish list for a small area of the things which
and
is there.
And for me, I think the bigger point is, this was never raised by anybody in the discussions that we had leading up to the finalisation of the standard. We had loads of conversations with banks about what to do about the duration for these types of facilities, and this point never was raised, ever. And so, and the ITG has said that this is clear. It might not be what they wish they had now, with the benefit of hindsight, but I think we have to respect the fact we've got a published standard and people are out there implementing it, and they've told us it's clear. And should that surely has to be a major consideration for us.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions? No? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.